Hey there, welcome back to the Etsy Seller Podcast. I'm your host, Cody McGuffey, and today we have a very fun, inspiring, technical conversation with a friend of mine, Jesse, and he's coming on to share his story, share his process, and how he's created he went from $0 in revenue, of course, on Etsy, just like anyone else does, and into multi-millions of dollars in revenue on Etsy. He absolutely crushes it. I've seen his stats in his store. I've seen his process. I trust it. I've used parts of it. I've shared lots of it with other people and they're getting some success with it. And I thought it'd be awesome to bring his story to the podcast, share with you guys listening to this a little bit about what he does and how he's making everything work. This episode is very fun. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Everbee, and we believe that everyone deserves the opportunity to pursue their passions and live life on their own terms. We believe in making e-commerce accessible to everyone in the world and using it to make a positive impact on their families and in our communities. Everbee is the e-commerce business platform that helps Etsy sellers and a lot of other sellers on other platforms find winning products and get more sales, grow their business. With Everbee, you'll understand what people are searching for on Etsy and what people are actually buying on Etsy. So you could just make what is in demand. And with Everbee email, you can actually build an email list, you can build an asset for your business and actually stay in touch and build a relationship with your customers long-term and actually build a very sustainable and long-term business. It's a tool you guys need to be using to grow your e-commerce business. So sign up for free, everbee.io. Let's jump in to today's show. Jesse, what's up, man? How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Cody?
Great, bro. Thank you so much for coming on. We've been friends for... gosh, what has it been, like a year and a half? We've talked about it. We talked about business all the time. Super excited to finally have you on the podcast. Well, welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on there. Super excited to add some value today. Hopefully I can pour in for everyone who listens.
Totally, man. You got a cool story. And I'm excited to share it because we have a lot of people on here that are just starting their Etsy journey, their e-commerce journey. We have people that have been in the game for a while too. That like do 100,000 plus per year in revenue. And you've done like big numbers, fun numbers, exciting numbers. You've also like started from nothing and grown it. And now you've gone like lots of ventures, but and we'll get into all that, but maybe let's just start with like, who's Jesse? Tell your story, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can start, you know, back when I'll say my entrepreneurial journey began, which was kind of at the end of 2016. So I was really, really young at this time. I was 19 years old. Kind of getting things going. I had failed at a few different little businesses. At that time, Amazon, like private label was super attractive. There was like every YouTube video was about Amazon private label. And so I tried to, you know, dip my toe in the water with no understanding, no experience. And I tried doing something, you know, looking back is kind of dumb, but I tried private labeling a water bottle at that time with no money, which you have to have honestly tens of thousands of dollars to even be remotely successful with a product like that. And so I was really just in a big learning phase and trying to figure out how I could, you know, emerge into the marketplace with, you know, no knowledge to start with. And I dabbled in a few things with Amazon. And then I started hearing about this opportunity with Etsy. And I was like, what is this Etsy marketplace? And, you know, as I was researching in and seeing how I could leverage it to build something, I just wanted to be a business owner. I wanted to build something. In that time frame, I found out that my wife was pregnant. So I found out I had my first daughter on the way during this time frame. And that was a really golden ticket for me because it was a huge motivating push for me to figure this out because I kind of stood my ground saying, hey, I wanted to make sure that, you know, my wife was going to be able to be a stay-at-home mom. That was really important to me. It was important to her. And so with that, you know, set up, we were both working minimum wage jobs, trying to build a business in the background. And so luckily, the one thing we had on our side is we didn't have a huge lifestyle built yet. And so it meant that I didn't have to have, you know, leaps and bounds ahead to replace her income. I just had to make just enough. And so I doubled down on Etsy and I did it specifically with jewelry. And now jewelry was really fun for me to double down on. It was just very time intensive. So I began the process, you know, October of 2016 was when I really started pouring that on. And from October to December, I mean, every extra second I had, I was pouring into my business. And I was able to get enough listings on Etsy to actually drive a little bit of success for that Q4 season. And just enough so to, you know, take the leap. So not only did I say, hey, you can stay at home starting now to my wife, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to take the leap of faith too. And so I took the leap of faith, quit my job, and boom, January hits, nothing. We're at like one sale a day, maybe. So we're living on a small savings account. My daughter was due in April. So we're like really in a tight window, and it was like all gas, no brakes for me. I mean, I was in straight up, like, I have to make this happen. And when your back is against the wall, you make things happen. And so that year we grew a lot, but, the trouble was, is I never really understood what I was doing. So when you're growing and you're figuring things out and you don't know what you're doing, it's tough and it's difficult because you have nothing to scale off of. And so I would get something done and I would apply it to everything and I have to revamp and do it over and over and over again. And it was a grind. It was a grind for the whole year. Wow. And by the end of the year, I got into a spot where, you know what, we had a really successful season. And from doing all that, I started to pick up some understanding that, like, if I could study the marketplace really, because that's really what all I was doing, because I had no idea what to do. So I was studying, you know, top sellers around me. I was figuring out reverse engineering what they're doing. But I was learning that if I could really isolate these sellers that were dominating and extract out what was working, that I could be successful too. And that's really how my story began to unravel, was I would study and learn and apply, not copy, but I would learn from these sellers, and I'd pull out these key points with design and with, you know, photos and with pricing and all of those things that matter with, you know, products on Etsy. And I began to get momentum. So
This is incredible. And I have to unpack so much of this because there's so much value that you've said, and it's such a cool story. You made it seem like so easy just now, by the way, which is typically how it works. And I know that it wasn't, and I want to kind of spend some time on that. So in 2016, you do this Amazon FBA thing that you kind of, or was that 2015?
That was 2015 into 2016, right in that same time frame. Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay. So, like, for anybody listening to this, so 2016, you start your journey, and this is like October. You're like kind of getting going. You got your first sale probably in that time period. You get some sales. Sounds like you had an awesome Q4. And awesome meaning what? What do you think awesome means to you?
Awesome meaning we hit about 50 sales a day, and we were running no advertisement at that time. So it was, what we were making was pretty solid margins with that. And again, because I didn't have a huge lifestyle built out, I think I put away like $8,000 in the bank. And to me at that time, I was 19 years old. I was like, dang, we're rolling in it with $8,000. Right. And that was just enough to like have that leap. It was a few months of you know, income for us. And yeah, so it wasn't crazy big, but it was big enough.
Oh, it's huge when you're at that time, at that stage in your life. Like, every sale is huge, actually. So
yeah,
everybody get context. You got a minimum wage job, you said, your wife did too. What were you guys doing? What kind of job?
Yeah, so I was a personal trainer, actually. So I was a minimum wage personal trainer with commissions. And then my wife was working at a daycare at that time frame.
Cool. And then tell me why. I want to know, like, what kind of drove you to have this like feeling of like your wife to leave her job, you to leave your job? Like, what was,
like, why? It's just like this drive I've always had to be, you know, one, to work for myself. Like, I don't care if I made just enough to make ends meet or if I make, you know, all the money in the world. I wanted to just be able to do my own thing. That was my biggest driver. And I think that's a huge driver for so many people, is they want to have the freedom to just work on their own craft, do what they want to do. And then secondary to that, it was for my wife, was she wanted to be a mom. It was very important to her, and not only be a mom, but be fully present, fully there, not working a job. She wanted to raise our kids. And we now have three kids, you know, fast forward, we have three kids. She homeschools them and really pours into them on a daily basis. So
congratulations, man. Boy, girl, what are they? What's the...
Yep. Two girls. I got so that first daughter on the way now is almost seven. She'll be seven in April. And then my second daughter, she's five. And then my newborn son, newborn-ish, he's about 5 months now.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
How did it feel when you first like told your wife that, hey, you can quit your job, or like, hey, I think we're good. And I know that it wasn't great after Q1 hit, the following Q1, but like, how did it feel at the time? Just because that's a lot of people's dream. And that was actually my dream, personally, too. And I think it's actually, if you're a woman listening to this, I know a lot of women that wanted to do the same thing for their husband. So it can go both ways, which is super cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember the feeling of like really looking and seeing, hey, we can actually make this work. And it was like this key turn for me of like, oh my gosh, we have enough that you can, not only can you stay home, but like, I'm going to take the leap with you. And it was just this such a cool time frame in my life. I can still feel it thinking back to that feeling, that rush of emotion of like, we're going to do this. And so it was an amazing time. But like you said, afterwards, it wasn't the glamour goes away when reality sets in, you know, January 1st, sales are gone and now it's time to build. So it was definitely a season.
It's kind of nice that you had, looking back on it, of course, in hindsight, it's nice that you lived like a fairly, it sounds like it was a, like you're just getting started. You didn't have a big life, like you mentioned, and big in the US or not big. Like, what was your monthly expenses at that time, do you think, if you can recall?
Yeah, recalling back to that, I think we were honestly, we could live off of somewhere around $2,500 a month or less. That was everything all in. So I think I was, you know, I was barely breaking, like, I mean, I was making $9.47 an hour doing what I was doing. My wife was also making $9.47 an hour. So, which is crazy with inflation now, those numbers aren't even visible anymore. But yeah, no, we didn't have very much to worry about. We didn't have a ton of expenses built up yet.
And I think the key point is, sounds like a key for me, if I was in that position, which I have been in that similar situation, the savings account plays a big role in that decision because you know that worst case, if something happens with the business or something changes, we at least can live off savings. Like we have a run rate, which is what people call this.
Yeah.
So you probably factored that into that equation, right?
That's exactly right. Yep. We factored in that we had, you know, probably about 3 months worth of income stored away, which was tight, but it was big enough because I saw some light at the end of the tunnel in a way of that I could see that we had driven success then. So I knew that in this small window of time, 2-3 months of really going all in every bit of time I could, to be able to result in that was a game changer for me because it gave me clarity that there was potential with what I was doing for the first time.
I agree. It sounds like that. And it sounds like you had a lot of confidence at this point too, where you created something in a very short period of time in the prior year that you're just like, I can do this in 3 months. Now I have all this knowledge in my head. Now I've had this confidence that I've done it before. Worst case, if something changes, I know that I can sprint and make it happen again. I think that was probably key for you.
It really was. It went from like peak confidence of feeling on top of the world to completely slam down to the bottom of, I have no idea what I'm doing. It was a real quick fluctuation. Right. Like I felt like, oh, I got this figured out. And then it was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it was a quick shift in January.
What do you think changed? Like why in January at that time? Can you remember? Was it purely seasonal or what was it?
So what happened was, you know, now that I understand how marketplaces ebb and flow and how customers pour in during holiday seasons, whether it's, you know, Christmas or Mother's Day or different events and things like that are happening, we really had leveraged, you know, fairly evergreen items. They weren't super seasonal, but we leveraged it right as sales were picking up. So we didn't have an understanding. We just launched our listings and we were able to go from like no data to 50 to 60 sales a day, which to me was like, wow, that caught a lot of traction. But what happens is a search volume drops a lot. So when your business is built on, we had about, I think like 50 items, maybe roughly somewhere in that ballpark. So when your business comes back in January, when you only have 50 items, that is your entire business. When you're on a platform, you have 50 products. You better hope that those products are dominating or highly in demand. And most of the time, you can't have a business based on this model with Etsy with only 50 products. It typically doesn't work.
Okay. I totally understand what you're saying when it comes to like the Q4 thing. You don't really have the experience of like doing this for a couple of years, you don't really understand how actually impactful Q4 actually is. Yeah. People talk about it like it's the biggest thing. But you don't, I talked about it for years before I truly understood.
Yeah.
Dude, sales actually quadruple, they 5X. And depending on your product, of course, it could 10X in the Q4 season. And that sometimes is a separator between profitable company or not profitable company. And a lot of these big companies, they run out of negative for the entire year until Q4 hits and then they like make up all their money. I don't like that business, but that's actually a lot of businesses do this.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yes. No, absolutely. Yeah, Q4 for me has been such a crazy time frame always in business where we were so like peak of me selling on Etsy. We'll get a little bit more into the continuation of the story, but I was running about $3.5 million a year. And now of that $3.5 million in the peak 30 days, I was breaking $1 million in sales. So just to give everyone context of what Q4 looks like, peak 30 days from the very end of November to like, you know, December 20th range. So November 20th to December 20th, breaking $1 million in that whole year, running about 3.5 million. So Q4 is just like, it was like collectively 40, 50%, at least bare minimum in like a 2 month period, November and December combined to be like our whole, you know, a huge chunk of our money we made that. And it's also a time frame when we're more profitable as well with our business. So Q4 matters a lot. If you build accordingly, you can have crazy huge months like that.
I want to spend just a moment on that and just to really help people understand what you just said. Mm-hmm. You threw out some big numbers that probably sometimes go over our head just because for whatever reason we're humans and that happens.
Yeah.
You just mentioned $3.5 million on Etsy in a given 12-month period of time. Mm-hmm. So everyone can really understand the possibilities, I think, of just e-commerce in general. And then obviously specifically on Etsy, not many people know a lot of people that have done those kind of revenue numbers on Etsy. Yeah. For some reason, it's a limiting belief that it's just not possible to make it over $100,000 or $50,000 a year. You just mentioned $3.5 million.
Yeah.
Can you explain the possibilities that are actually available on Etsy?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great question. I'll try to break it down a little bit here too. I'll try to get a little bit technical, so hopefully, you know, give people some insight on how to actually, you know, do this for themselves. So, you know, picking up where I left off with the jewelry, like we spent, you know, a big year and a half focusing, doubling down on our jewelry. But what we found with that process was it was really, really time consuming to be able to really scale out a business and be able to hit the numbers we're about to talk about here. You had to be able to scale things out. It's not going to happen with a small amount of listings necessarily. And it's definitely not going to happen if you don't know what you're doing. So with the jewelry, the problem we had was we had to source inventory. So we're getting, you know, charms and all these components to our products. We're bringing them in-house. We're taking our product photos. We're editing those photos. We're getting them listed on Etsy. And if they do great, awesome. If they don't do great, that's difficult because it's quite the process there. So especially when you don't know what you're doing, there's a lot of difficulty with that. But we grinded it out. We made it work. Awesome. Year and a half later, I basically got to a point where I was like, okay, this is great. We're you know, driving success on Etsy, but how could I do this quicker? And I wanted to do it faster. I wanted to do it easier. And what I found was I was finding these print product sellers, whether it was, you know, coffee mugs or t-shirts, different print items, where I was like, they have a, you know, 500, 800, 1,000 listings that are nearly the same product. It's just a different design on all these ones. I was like, and a light bulb went off in my head at that point, which was, what if I could just get, at this time, it was a case of coffee mugs. I was going to start selling coffee mugs. If I get a case of coffee mugs, what if I could turn this one coffee mug from that case into 500 different listings? And to me, that was just totally different than the 500 different jewelry listings meant a whole lot of other efforts involved. And based on leveraging the graphic design for that product, I could leverage a ton of what mattered, which is search volume. And so to give you, you know, some practical advice that I learned in this exact moment was doubling down on one product at a time gives you a big edge in the marketplace because you're for so many different reasons. The number one reason is you can really understand how to add value through that one product type. So if we focus in on a product like mugs are very scalable. You know, you can put a design on it. You can turn one mug, one set of photo templates into hundreds of different products, leveraging tons of search volume. But when you double down on that, you can learn, like, from a design standpoint, what's working. From a pricing standpoint, what's working, from, you know, an offer tactics and from everything that these sellers are putting on their listings, like what is actually working, and you can extract that out and apply it to one product type. When you try to do that same approach across a bunch of different product types, you know, a lot of Etsy sellers like to have a bunch of different things to offer because they don't really know, they aren't focusing in on anything. They're trying to figure it out. And so when you focus on a bunch of different things, you are basically spreading yourself thin and you're not able to understand how to bring the value. And that's all that you're ever going to do to drive sales is you're going to create a product that's more valuable than someone else. That's the only way you can drive sales. You know, as long as you're leveraging search volume, people are actually looking for what you have. You have to create a great product. So to actually have the understanding, you need to double down. So doubling down on one product type has been the secret to my success, the quote unquote secret. There's no secret to it.
Sure.
But that has been where I found a lot of momentum.
I have a question about that because I tend to fall on, I look at this as in two ways. One way is like the people that are specific product type. Mm-hmm. Which what you said, you have mugs and you specialize in mugs and you're just like the mug guy, right? Mug expert or that the tumbler expert or water bottle expert, whatever it is. Yeah. And then there's the person who focuses on the niche. The specific, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the what do you say? The audience niche, I guess you could say. Not the product niche.
Yeah.
I tend to fall on that one just because that's my experience. That's what I've always done. I believe in that. Now I tend to, I'm very curious about yours though, because a lot of people listening to this, they've been they get put in both directions. They're like, I think we should focus on trends, or I think I should focus on a product. But yep. then I hear I should focus on a niche too. Like, which one is it and which one's for me? How do you advise something like this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it all comes down to the fundamentals of selling on a marketplace. So let's say, for example, you weren't selling on a marketplace. You had your own website. You drive all your own traffic. Should you niche down and brand in that scenario? 150%, you absolutely should, because you are trying to bring your own traffic in.
So you're talking one person, one type of demographic, and if you own your own website. So, okay.
Absolutely. And so that's when you niching down makes a whole lot of sense there. If you're all over the place, it's not going to make sense. But now let's talk about on a platform like Etsy or a platform like Amazon. We'll double down on Etsy. You know, it's same principle here, which is, you know, the name of the game is search volume. And when you look at niching down, quote unquote, this is the mistake I see a lot of sellers do. What they're doing in a nutshell is they're taking all this potential search volume. There's 100 million active buyers on Etsy, and they're taking their ceiling and they're slamming their ceiling down. They're limited, because when you niche down, you limit the amount of search volume you can leverage, the amount of potential you can have for your business, because you're on a platform. Why would you give Etsy a percentage of your business? Because they're providing you with something. How do you leverage that? You isolate what people are looking for. So when you do that, in a sense, though, where like, I'm going to be the best, you know, dog mom shop on Etsy, that's great and all, but your entire business is based on the dog mom search volume that's on Etsy, because it's really not going to be coming from anywhere else because you're on a platform. So niching down does not make sense on the platform to me, because you bring your ceiling so low. But then there's the bounds of, now if I just look at, you know, everything, so I don't have any, you know, refinement of my process, and I'm going to sell a little bit of everything leveraging all the search volume, then I can't bring the value. I don't understand what I'm doing. So I'm just going to be a jack of all trades and all these different product types, and it's not going to work. So the happy medium between those two of niching down and moving your ceiling way too low, your total potential too low, and, you know, going so high, far beyond, with your potential being maxed out where you can't actually drive any value. The happy medium between that is product type focus, because you get a little bit of the both worlds in that scenario.
You know, you're the only person that I know, or the only person I've actually talked to that has executed this so well. Yeah. And I think there's like the value in what you're saying. I think we just need to like, it's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, how does one do this? Because a million questions come in my head of, okay, do you stick with one product type for a while and then you branch out from there? Or like, you literally only focus on one product type and then you just serve a whole bunch of people. And then how does that work with the categories on the left of like, okay, do you have specific niches on the left then? Like birthdays or personalized or, you know, dog mom, soccer mom, fun dads. Like, how does that look inside of a shop?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to begin this process, you really need to understand the difference between a product category or product type and a high potential product category or high potential product type. So when you're looking at high potential versus low potential, it means it's a singular product that has a lot of search volume expressed through hundreds of different in-demand products that you can have within that same category. There are certain categories on Etsy or product types that don't make sense to do this with, because if you just double down that one, you hit that ceiling too fast. But when you have a high potential product type, you tend to find two things: a whole lot of potential and, you know, good, healthy margins as well for you to be able to price effectively and sell at scale. Because you need both of those to really work with it. So when you find product types that meet these parameters, and I can give you some of these parameters in a minute here so you can actually use them. But when you find these products that meet that, you can double down there. So it's examples of high potential product types. I'll give you some here. So t-shirts are an example. Coffee mugs are an example. Tumblers are an example. Baby onesies are an example. Necklaces are an example. And there's dozens of others, but these are all examples of product types that are high potential.
So like a bunch of different niches are searching this type of product, like across all these. So like t-shirts, mugs, necklaces, all this stuff. Like, we all know, we all have these in our houses, in our workplaces, in our cars. Like, they're everywhere. Okay, got it.
So let's say we'll use an example for t-shirts, because t-shirts are the easiest to resonate with a lot of times. So t-shirts are a high potential product type. Now with this, you're not looking to niche down at all. Actually, you're looking to offer products in that category of t-shirts across all different niches. It could be sports related. It could be, you know, professions related. It could be people related. It could be animals. It could be events. It's literally all niches under the sun. boom, you're going to be sitting with a lot of potential with your t-shirt. So it's not niching down at all. So just to provide clarity there, it's leveraging the search volume within that category. So when you do this process, you want to isolate the data for yourself. So the way in which I do this, this used to be such a manual process for me. When I would qualify a product category on the front end, I'd say, hey, okay, let's say, okay, qualified t-shirts, they're a product type that meets the potential I need. Now, how am I going to find all these individual in-demand products that matter? Because the base of your business on a platform is search volume. This is all based on this understanding. It is based on search volume. If you're not leveraging search volume on a platform, you're wasting your time. So I've qualified. Yep, go for it.
How do you qualify the search volume? For example, let's say I'm like, I want to be a shirt product. The high potential search product is going to be about t-shirts. Okay. Yes. How do I qualify this as a high search volume product? How do I do this?
Yeah, I used to just chase rabbit trails of figuring this out. The easiest way that I do, I call this a net casting exercise. So you can do this with any product type. The four pillars I use for net casting are people, professions, animals, and events. Because of all the data I've had, those are the four search categories across all product types that I sell the highest volume, because there's a lot of search volume for those four. So again, people, professions, animals, and events. When you do this net casting exercise, all you need to do is you take your product type keyword. So let's say you have the product type is shirts. You want to take your most simplistic version of that keyword and just use the term shirt here. And you want to start plugging in these different search terms. So for people, this could be like moms, dads, grandmas, aunts, sisters, cousins, whatever, followed by your product category keyword. So mom shirt, dad shirt, you know, sister shirt, whatever. And you're plugging these into Etsy. I call this net casting for a reason. You're casting your net out to see what you catch. What you're trying to catch are the shops that are dominating with these products. So you're not necessarily finding the individual products yet, but by finding some of these shops that have some volume behind them, it will allude to the fact that there's potential there. So when you go through this process, I have a lot of parameters, and I actually have a free course we can attach it to this. And this course takes you exactly through this process, so it can be really tangible for you. There's a lot of specifics to it. But when you go through this process, you start finding these shops that are selling well within that product type. So again, you can do that with people, professions, animals, and events. So professions, I might do, you know, lawyer shirts or nurse shirt or teacher shirt. For animals, I might do panda shirt, fox shirt, koala shirt. For events, I might do Mother's Day shirt, you know, Halloween shirt, Christmas shirt. And I'm casting my net out. I'm trying to find, are there shops that are already doing really well with these product types? When I go into the shop, I'm seeing, okay, do they predominantly sell this one product? Are they selling a bunch of different ones? So the data might be skewed. They might be driving their success with other products entirely. Or are they predominantly like 50% or more? Are they selling well with this one product? Right. And when I start finding shop after shop that's met, you know, my parameters, which is typically about 20,000 sales in that shop, it starts to tell me that, okay, if they've sold 20,000 units predominantly within this one product type and they're on a platform, does that not mean that there's a lot of search volume behind it? Would they be selling that many products at scale if there was no search volume? The answer would be no, not on a platform. They had their own website elsewhere. They could drive all that traffic there. But on a platform, they have to be leveraging the search volume. So then it's qualifying it for me. It's saying, okay, this product type has the potential for me to work with not 10 or 20 or 50 listings, but potentially 300, 400, 500, 1,000 different products within this one, which means these are all at-bats for my business, a ton of potential for me to leverage. And so that net casting exercise can be done for any product type. It's very simple. Don't overcomplicate it. And you're just looking to qualify it on the front end.
Beautiful. So you said, just for everybody to take notes here, the four pillars are people, pet.
Close. People, professions, animals, and events. And there's no right or wrong answer, by the way, when you're plugging these in, because it's a net casting exercise. You're just trying to find the shops that meet parameters. And if they meet those parameters, it's qualifying them as high potential. So again, I think you'll probably drop the free course I have just so people can do this. It's very 100%. Technical with the numbers. I don't want to overwhelm everyone with all these numbers and parameters that I use, so they can check that out if they want to learn more about that.
Yeah, amazing. This is so valuable. And I love how we like went deep into a technical aspect of this. High level, I know we're already at 30 minutes, but high level, what are the next step in your process? Okay, so you've identified these shops. Now what?
Yep. So now that you've identified these shops, this is where, again, my process was so manual, like starting, I think back 2-3 years ago was when it started to not become so manual for me. So I used to go into these shops. Okay, I qualify them. Now I got to go listing by listing by listing by listing by listing by listing by listing thousands of times over. It would take me sometimes 2 weeks to do my market research to map out what I'm trying to map out as I'm reverse engineering the products that are actually selling well, which alludes to the search volume. So I would go in product by product by product, and I'd look for things like, do they have a bestseller badge? Do they have a lot in the cart right now? When did they last sell? If I scroll down the listing, how many favorites do they have? And I'd use these metrics to tell me, okay, these products have a ton of engagement on them, which clearly tells me that there's plenty of search volume. So I get on, you know, one product in their shop would have it, another one would not. One would have it, the next seven would not. And so I do this manually. Now, with tools like Everbee, this is really, really easy to do. You can literally use, like, you have a tool inside of Everbee, the shop analyzer, where you can plug in a shop name, any shop name on Etsy. So let's say it meets the criteria. You plug it in, you export it, Everbee sends you an email, and now you have all this data collected for you right in front of you. And you can filter by things like total sales, because that's what I care about the most. If I can find products that have sold hundreds and hundreds of times over, it alludes to the search volume. So that's I think it's the most accurate way to display the search volume for a product is how many times it's the estimated total sales are, because that means if you're on a platform, the product would not be selling hundreds of times over unless a lot of people were looking for it. So that's the practical side of going through it.
You're trying to figure out like what products are in demand, right? And that's the search volume to you. Okay. Yes. So you first make this list of all these shops. Mm-hmm. And how many shops typically would you want missing? Like, are we talking 2? Are we talking 10? How many?
Ideally, you can get up to 15 to 20 that are close to the parameters I provide. That's ideal because you're going to be working with a ton of potential. But even if you find only 5 or 10 that meet the parameters here, you're still going to have a lot of search volume to work with. But ideally, 15 to 20.
So you go and export all the sales from each one of these shops. And now you have this. And now the ideal is to what? Put it all into one list type of thing? Is that
That's exactly right. So once you get all, let's say you have 15 to 20 t-shirt shops that met the criteria, you want to bring it all into one giant Google sheet. And I call this a master list. So you have basically probably at this point, if you have 15 to 20 shops, it, depending on the product type, it could be 5,000 listings. It could be even more, could be less, but you're gonna have a lot to work with. What you want to do immediately is you want to just keep things simple. Filter the total sales column from high to low. You want to just see the products that have sold the most first and foremost, because if they've sold that many times, it's alluding to a lot of search volume. And you want to then chop off the products off your list. There's going to be thousands of them that don't meet any criteria that you need. So this to me is less than 20 sales. It's not enough data on a product to say that this is worth your time or not. So you chop off any product that has 20 sales or less off your list. And then you can further refine it more. And I talk about this in the course too, so you can, you know, go through this to really, you know, go back. There's a lot of details to this, but you want to, you know, remove trademark infringement style products. You want to remove duplicates of items, and you want to remove irrelevant product categories, product types. You might have some products that creep on your list that are, you know, if you ran out on a t-shirt shop, maybe there's some sweatshirts that pop in there. You don't want to get shiny object syndrome. You're doubling down on one product type, so you want to remove those as well. So that's the process you'd be doing.
Beautiful. Okay. So now you have this list of these like hot products. So you're just like, oh, these things are gold. Like if I had these products, I would be crushing right now.
Yeah.
Now, how do we get into the creation mode, right? Without copying, without make sure we're adding value. How do you get into that phase?
Yeah. Super good question. So now at this point in time, you know, you go through this, you'll feel really good when you get to here. Cause what you're going to see in front of you is you're going to see probably hundreds and hundreds of products, if not a couple thousand products still in front of you that all have a ton of potential, you know, behind them based on the total sales they've ran. So if you highlight the total sales column, I always love to do this, like inside of Google Sheets, highlight the whole total sales column to see how many total sales are you looking at right now from these, you know, these 500 right. products in front of you. Sometimes you'll see that you're looking at 500,000 sales worth of data in front of you, which that right there should tell you something. If I'm isolating these 500 products right here and they've sold 500,000 times, there's two things that I want to take notes on here. One being, now I know these are in demand. There's search volume behind them. But two, this is a refined piece of market research for me to learn from. I can learn from all this data that's in front of me because they obviously are doing something right to have sold 500,000 times over across those. So you not only get to isolate the search volume, but you get to learn from all that search volume.
You're going to get a whole bunch of inspiration too. It's literally momentum in your brain. You're like, wow, yep. Look at what is possible.
Yes.
You know, like, because you're going to see all this revenue. I mean, I get so excited about this stuff because it's literally potential, and it's real dollars that actually impact a real life. That's the coolest part about it. It's not some like game that like you get extra points for. It's like, no, literally it equals food on a table, or equals a new car, equals your house, equals bills paid. Like it's real life money, and the real dollars. And the coolest part about it is that so many times we get this question of, is Etsy dead, or is print on demand dead, or t-shirts possible, still so saturated, all the stuff. And I crack up personally, because I'm looking at data from Everbee users.
Yeah.
And Everbee users, we just did this data the other day. I posted inside of our Facebook group. Also, just Everbee customers, last 30 days, I'm sorry, Q4 was like $259 million in revenue.
Yeah.
Just in Q4 of last year.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And we don't have that many users, customers, you know?
Yeah.
And even Q1 of this year, over $1.5 million of Etsy sales happens every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
You're not surprised. I'm almost like not really surprised, but I feel like it's so incredible, right? The volume, it's the potential that we have.
Dude, it's wild. And that is why we exchange a percentage of our business to a company like Etsy, where we're giving them, because they have 100 million active buyers that they are providing you with. And so when you see that and you understand how to collect the data and to leverage what they're giving you, because that's really what you're doing, you're properly leveraging what Etsy is providing for you. And you're isolating that, you know, like for me, through product types, you can run crazy numbers. Obviously, you're not gonna run $100 million yourself. Right. But when you look at, you know, a bunch of different users, yeah, it's crazy the potential in the marketplace.
Yeah, the question that I usually ask myself is like, okay, so $1.5 million is coming every single day. Like, I'm a pretty capable person, or I'm willing to learn to be capable at least. Like, can I get 0.001% of this? Like, can I get a certain piece of this pie?
Yeah.
In reality, the pie is getting bigger constantly, because e-commerce is getting bigger. Like, the answer is, it should be, if it's not, it should be, yes, I can, or yes, I will be able to in the near future kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So back to your design, because you have a cool, super cool design, like a learning process where you like can pick out trends and from all this learning. So can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. So you're talking about designing specifically, like how would I go about designing products?
Yeah. Like, you have this list of products now that you're just like, these things are awesome. Now, what do you do with them?
Absolutely. So once you get to that point in the process, you have your refined, you know, master list in front of you, you've edited it down. Now you do need to go into the research and development phase, which is really learning from that list. And for that, one of the things is going to be designing, and then every other aspect of your offer. So again, what you have to understand is, if this list in front of you has 200,000, 500,000, 750,000 sales in front of you, it's telling you a lot of things. These customers have chosen to purchase these products for a reason. So let me learn why. And so as you go through this is a tedious process, by the way. And I want to just be transparent on the front end. It takes time, and it should, because you're going to fast track becoming an expert within a product type in a relatively short period of time. Before, it would take you a long, long period of time to reconcile all these products. And then now you got to go into the research, but you can fast track the data collection with Everbee. And then as you have this in front of you, now you study and study and study. So this looks very simple. You need to open each product individually down that list. Now, you don't have to do it if you have 2,000 products. You don't have to open 2,000 products, you know, all. But let's say you want to open at least the top 300, 400, 500 products on that list. And what you're looking for are a handful of different things. Design-wise, what are these sellers doing with their designs? What's the thread that intertwines a lot of these designs? When you open up your first 25, you're probably going to see no thread. But as you get, you know, 50 in, 100 in, 200 in, 300 in, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I keep seeing this specific design attribute. I call these, for the design portion, key design attributes. So for every product type, there's different KDAs. So for t-shirts, you might be like, wow, I'm seeing that people are using script font a lot, or they're using cheetah print, or this like retro thing is happening a ton, or there's this weird floral thing I keep seeing. And like, I keep seeing these little twisty things. I think they're called glyphs. You come to find all these design attributes, they're done over and over and over again. And this is where, if you have the right frame of mind, you're equipping yourself with these KDAs. You're saying, okay, this clearly works, this clearly works, this clearly works. And you typically can find, you know, with any product category or product type, you know, about 7 to maybe 12 key design attributes for it. It's specific and it's focused for a reason, because you're trying to find that thread that is through all those designs. So you equip yourself with that. Now, it's a lot different than if I tell you, like, okay, for t-shirts, the KDAs are, you know, script, their watercolor, their cheetah print, their floral, their glyphs, their, you know, all these different things I can tell you. Whenever I say something like that, you're going to see something in your mind and I'm going to see something in my mind. The key is, this is why you have to go through listing by listing by listing is you have to know, what do I mean by feeder print? What do I mean by script? What do I mean by these different components? Because when you know it, that's when you're actually equipped. There's a difference between just someone telling you and actually being equipped yourself. So you do have to go through this process. With that as well, you want to do the same thing for learning with your listing photos. So you're just, you're understanding, what are these, you know, these sellers doing? What are they setting up? What's the flow look like from their front photo in the middle? What information are they covering? You know, what are they missing? What can I learn from? And you're diving into that. You're diving into the reviews as well on these listings. What are people loving about this product type? What are they not getting enough of in this product type? How can I highlight what matters for these buyers? So you're diving into all these details. Same thing goes for the pricing structure. Same thing goes for any offer tactics. Are they running 24-hour sales? Are they throwing a badge on their front photo? Are they doing a model photo with a physical model? Or are they just doing like a mock-up of the product itself? Like, what are they actually doing with their entire offer that you're seeing this thread connected throughout all these top sellers? And that is categorized in every single aspect to your listing. And if you can equip yourself with every piece of that, now you've flipped the switch in your business. Now you're like, oh my gosh, what should I do with my photos? Well, I actually know what I should do. What should I do with my designs? Well, I actually know what I should do. What should I do with you know, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing? You are equipped to actually be able to leverage that information now. So now at that point in the process, you're ready. You have what you need to work with, and then you got to start going to apply it. So does that make sense with the process I've kind of explained there?
Absolutely does. And some people, there's two types of people that will hear this. They're like, damn, it's a lot of work. That's first camp, right? Damn, it's a lot of work. I can't, you know, I can't just, you know, slop something up. And the answer is, those days are over. You're competing against advanced sellers, or you're going to be continuing to get more and more advanced. The more people that use Everbee are going to get more advanced. Like, the game is going to be, it's increasing, right?
Yes.
And there's a second person who are just like, shit, now I understand. Like, I need to just get better. I'm going to do all that work because I'm playing long on this anyway. Yes. And after I invest in this, and if I invest the time into learning, then it will clear up so many other questions that come along the way. And they will get excited because they know that 99% of people won't actually do all that hard work. And they will be the 1% that will. And they're going to be crushing. And that's why there's such a thing as the 1% seller, because 99% of most people won't do the hard stuff. And this is kind of the hard stuff. Like, this research part isn't sexy. It's not easy. You said it yourself, it takes some time.
Yeah.
But damn, as soon as you got it though, like, you're set up.
Yes. And the beauty with this is what I want people to understand too. And this is what I tell anyone that I've personally worked with or mentored in this process is, get this done right with one. Just tell yourself, I'm going to figure this out for one product type. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to do it right. If it's t-shirts, cool. If it's mugs, cool. If it's tumblers, cool. Whatever it is, pick one and don't waver. Go through this process in full. Be super thorough with it. Become an expert with that one, because guess what happens? If you can drive success with one product type, you just justified yourself that you are able to do that with one, which means you can do that with two, three, four, five, six. This is how I scaled my business, is because when I did it with one, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm just touching the potential that's here. There's a bunch of other product types over here. So what if I just did this same process and I was thorough with it from scratch with this next one and the next one, the next one? And what you come to find is, the second time you do it, you're better. The third time you do it, you're even better. And not only are you better, but you're faster because you did it. You took the time to double down and do it right the first time. So that process will either forever hinder you or will forever serve you, depending on how thorough you get with it, because it's going to be what you continue to do in your business. And, you know, speaking on like the time it takes, this is the funny part. Most sellers will spend the same amount of time. A lot of people are going to spin their wheels and, you know, try to get around doing all the hard work. They're going to spend the same amount of total output of time versus the seller who gets super serious and they double down and they stay focused. Both those sellers, same amount of time applied, two different results entirely, because one was focused and one was scattered. So it's worth it.
Completely agree with you. Yeah. Couple high level questions, or quick questions, I guess. You said you had method of shops that you did the strategy to. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you didn't say that actually. I'm asking. You said multiple products. Do you have multiple shops for each product?
Yes. Yes. So four different Etsy shops across. I have to tell you the total product type. So I'll give you some examples. So we have one shop that tumblers, mugs, and ornaments in it. Another shop with onesies and toddler shirts, so more baby apparel. We have another shop with t-shirts, sweatshirts, and tank tops. And then my fourth shop with jewelry, which necklaces, bracelets, keychains predominantly.
Perfect. And then people that are asking right now themselves is, okay, is this all handmade? Is this all print on demand? Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, great, great question. So it started out handmade jewelry was where we started. And then we pivoted into the print product space, which then allowed us to go more of the print on demand approach. So how I've driven the majority of my success over time, I've sold over $10 million of predominantly print products in the space. These print product categories have been the ones I've been able to scale out the most and the easiest. So we're talking, you know, onesies and toddler shirts and t-shirts and sweatshirts and coffee mugs and tumblers and ornaments. These are all different high potential product types that I've leveraged. And so with the POD space, that's the beauty of it, because you do all this data collection, you do all this process, and now you go to work on it right now. You don't have to wait. You don't have to get inventory in. You don't have to go through, you know, you're getting your product photos done and do that really slow inch by inch, which is fine. You can do that approach, and people drive success with it all the time. I'm not saying you have to do print on demand, but the beauty with print on demand is it's so much more scalable for the average seller.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. And man, you got a lot going on. You have kids, you have three kids, you're married, you have a business, you have multiple businesses actually, which I want to get into that next. But how do you balance it first from a family perspective? And when I say balance, I'm even hesitant to use that word. I hate that word. How do you make it all work?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Number one, you got to be on the same page with your wife. I'll say that for me. So for me, I have to be on the same page with my wife, Destiny. We're one in the same. We're playing the same game together. We understand what that looks like. So when you say balance, I love that. You're like, I don't even want to use the word balance because it looks different at all times. There's some seasons of time for me where I have a tremendous amount of time with like my wife and kids, and other times where I have a lot more limited time because, you know, seasons come and change, things ebb and flow. And so it's busy, but you got to be able to communicate and be on the same page with your spouse, your person, you got to have that set up on the front end, so everyone has clarity on what that looks like. So communication is a big one. And then for me, I keep my daily structure set in a way where I can have the time for, you know, my kids. When I get done working, I'm focused on time with them. So I think that's really important to give yourself the parameters, just like we do with anything else. If we're willing to give ourselves parameters with business, we should probably give ourselves some parameters in our personal life as well. That's going to help everything to thrive. So
I love that. Very similar setup, it sounds like to me. What does your structure look like?
Yeah. So Monday through Friday, I'm usually working from, I get up early before the kids are awake. So I have a whole facility that we produce products out of. And I usually work from home during when it's not a busy season, because I want to get up early. I get up before my wife and kids. I sneak down to my home office and I start grinding early before anyone's up. After that, I'll spend some time. Sometimes I get to eat breakfast with my kids in the morning. It's like a beautiful part about being a business owner in this scenario, where I get the opportunity to do that. I get to see them. And then, you know, once I get through my day, I have a very structured day, typically speaking, usually around 3:30 in the afternoon. I turn off what I'm doing. And it's tough to turn off what you're doing sometimes, especially when you're in the midst of projects and you got, you know, things like this right here. You got your phone telling you all these different notifications and things that are intruding in your life. You got to be able to shut it out to an extent. So usually from, you know, 3:30 on, I'm as focused as I can be with, you know, just with my wife and my kids. And so that's my typical structure, Monday through Friday. Then on the weekends, everyone knows, people who work with me, I am usually not able to get a hold of, people can't get a hold of me on the weekends most of the time. I pretty much don't respond to anything until Monday morning. And I try to keep that as structured as possible, because after doing this for, you know, 7 years or so now, I've seen what it looks like with a toxic relationship with your business when all you can do is focus on that and it's an intruding on everything. You got to keep that balance, which again, I love how you're like, you can't really use the word balance, but it is a balance still at the same time. You have to have some sort of parameters to say, no, I have to put a stop at some point in time. So it's
I love that, man. Very similar, I would say. I usually start my day depending on the day, depending on how the kids sleep. To be honest, I have two young kids too. Right? I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. So like sleeping through the night is a thing, but it's not like 100% of the time. It's like, we're talking 60% of the time.
Yes.
But I wake up around, you know, 4:30 in the morning. If they sleep all night, and I'll get some hours in before, usually finish up my day around 3:30 PM my time.
Yeah.
As far as like the structured stuff. And then at that point, I'm like hardcore stop. You know, I'm out of my office, my home office at 3:30 PM, no matter what.
Yeah.
To go and help my wife with the kids, or go play with the kids, or jump on the trampoline with the kids, something like that. Very, very similar. We do this thing. I'm curious if you do it, something like this, but I personally love my work, you know, and my wife and I are very, very aligned with all this stuff. And what we decided to do is we needed to have one more like kind of work day or work night, we call it, to where we have one night a week where she gets, we call it alone night. Uh-huh. And she gets to do whatever she wants with that night. I get basically from 3:30 p.m., I got the kids. You know, I got dinner, I got baths, I got bed, everything. She can do whatever she wants to do, wherever she wants to do, all night if she wants to or whatever. And sometimes she goes and reads or sits in the car and just like does nothing away from the kids. Yeah. By night, I usually take my time to go, and I go to like a local coffee shop that's like open until 12 p.m.
Yeah.
And I'll just go and like plug work for like another 8 hours because I enjoy it and I literally am obsessed with it. And it's not like work, like meaning responding to emails. Sometimes it's like dreaming and sometimes it's manifesting. And sometimes it's reading a book on marketing or on product or user experience, like nerding out on certain things. Do you have anything like that that you guys do?
Yes. Yeah. So we've definitely, in this exact season, again, the balance always forever changing where, because we have a baby where, you know, that baby, I can't feed him because breastfed baby, you know, my wife doesn't really get that opportunity right now, but we have had, you know, many seasons previously where we have had balance like that, where, you know what, I got the kids, you go do your thing. And we try to keep that, you know, structure. We also try to do one date night per week, which I always want to do it more than that. But, you know, when we have, you know, three kids and a lot of responsibilities, sometimes it's tough. You got to really prioritize getting that in. So that's one thing we love to do. And then I just actually did this the other night. We do this often. So I do daddy daughter date nights. It's one of my favorite things to do. I just took my 5-year-old daughter out and took her to go play laser tag and, you know, play. There's a place called Wonderland where we're at, where she can play all the games, and took her for ice cream and took her shopping. So it's like, just give her the world for a night. And so we like to do that as well as a rhythm.
I love that, man. We do something similar to that. She'll take my wife will take my, we'll switch off. Like we'll do one-on-one. I completely agree. It's super impactful time.
Yeah.
This has been so incredible, so valuable. Thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you, man? Where can people find that course? Where can people find you, connect with you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you head over to YouTube, I have a course I posted on there actually recently. It's my free course. It's not like a typical free course. I'd say it's a lot more high level than your average course out there. It's an hour and 10 minutes long, value packed from start to finish. It really gives you the understanding of getting things going with the right foundation in place and getting yourself actually able to, you know, sell at scale. I actually have some really cool testimonials from my free course. This is actually wild. I'll just say one real quick. We can kind of wrap up here. But her name is Suhani. She doesn't live in America at all. She is, I forget what country she's in, but she is a younger entrepreneur. And she wrote me a book inside of an email in December that was her story. And she told me, hey, like, I just wanted to thank you so much for providing this free course. And she told me how she applied everything she learned. She watched it over and over and over again, really understood the fundamental approach. And she was running about 150 to 200 sales a day in the midst of Q4 after listening to that course in August to September range. And she actually ended up coming on to Inner Circle Prints, which is my fulfillment company, right in the middle of the season, selling 150 to 200 ornaments a day because, you know, Printify couldn't meet what she needed with it specifically. But it's just so cool to see, you know, for her start of her journey, being able to drive success from a free course. So not to blow air up my pipes and say this free course is the end all be all, but it's definitely value packed for a reason. So go check it out on YouTube. You can find my channel. It's just Jesse Teaches on YouTube. And Cody, if you want to drop the link anywhere, you can as well.
Bro, thank you so much for that. It's so amazing. Congratulations on that. How cool is that someone would take the time to go through your stuff and then also take the time to write their story and tell you the result they got? And they didn't pay you a penny to do it right at the time. Like that's like the most, talk about good karma. You know what I'm saying? Like that's kind of what it's about. It's like, talk about just like good karma, just adding value to the marketplace.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anybody listening to this, we'll drop all links. We'll gather links from Jesse, drop them all in the bio, link in the description or the show notes, depending on where you're listening to this. Jesse, are you on social or anything like that besides YouTube?
Not as much right now. So I'd say YouTube is the best place to find me. I'm going to have more content popping out there too. So go find my channel, Jesse Teaches, and there'll be more content popping out soon.
Amazing, man. Thank you again for your time. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Cody.
Man, cheers.